Hello and welcome to the Tennis Menu's daily Roland Garros show. Half of the fourth round is done and we are in well and truly into the business end of the tournament. Val Febbo here with you for thetennismenu.com. You can head to thetennismenu.com to get an annual subscription for just $99.90 US, which includes over 600 tennis-specific drills and resources to make you a better tennis coach. It is absolutely brilliant. You do not want to pass that offer up. It's fantastic. We have got a massive edition of the program today. Dominic Thiem pushed to the limit by Hugo Gaston last night. Was up two sets to love. Gaston came back to force a fifth. We'll chat a lot about that match and what exactly happened that Gaston did, or what he managed to do, what Thiem didn't do, that the match progressed to a fifth set. Rafa Nadal over Sebastian Korda, and Korda had a really, Rafa gave Korda a really nice gesture at the end of the match, and we'll talk more about that. Alexander Zverev, that one is huge. Playing with COVID symptoms, still went out there. We'll dive more into that as well. Diego Schwartzman is through as well, but also Simona Halep, absolutely belted. We'll fill you in on what happened there. Elena Svitolina ticking along very nicely, and two qualifiers are through to the quarterfinals in the women's draw. But the show wouldn't be the show without these two men sitting beautifully here on my Zoom camera, and one of them is Mark Tsopoulos, the best high performance coach in the business. Mark, how are you?
Going very well, thanks, Val, and great to be back. Obviously, incredible night of tennis and incredible things happening. I mean, you know, COVID symptoms for Zverev is probably the talk of the French Open. Does that affect the rest of the French Open? Will it continue to go ahead? You know, Jannik Sinner, the young Italian, absolutely played amazing last night. Does that stop his run at the French Open? Who knows what's going to happen in the next 24 hours when they do dissect this. But I'm looking forward to going through all that with you guys today. And just how Gaston got back into that match, I thought he was brilliant. And I'll talk about a little bit of the tactical nous around what he was doing.
Very excited for that, Mark. And the other man that makes this trio what it is Joel Ferrucci. Joel, you said yesterday that you might have some Arabic for us. Have you actually got it?
Short answer, no. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, boys. But yeah, good morning. Another good night of the French Open, and yeah, as Mark said, somewhat controversial as well. So let's get stuck in.
Yeah, I think, and we have to start off with that Alexander Zverev news. He said last night that he was playing with symptoms, and I think there was a headache, a fever, and a sore throat as well. Felt really lethargic. Didn't feel great on court at all, and hasn't been tested since the 29th of September. It is the 5th of October now. That's a week. That's 6 days. So that's a long, long time to not be tested when you're supposedly in a bubble. The Americans were testing every 2 to 3 days at the US Open, and you're finding out results pretty quickly. The fact that Zverev hasn't been tested at all and then gone and played, it's a cardinal sin, if you pardon the pun, because he did play Jannik Sinner. But you can't possibly think that that is a good idea. And we've seen Zverev flout the rules a little bit this year with going out dancing after what happened with the Adria Tour, being a part of that disaster that Novak Djokovic headed up, and Goran Ivanišević as well. But the fact that he has gone out and played is a blight on him, but then it's a blight on the FFT for the fact that they haven't even been testing. Like, this is supposed to be a bubble. We are supposed to be in a global pandemic. Australia is on, or Melbourne is on one hand, on one extreme, going to stage four lockdown when they don't have like even probably 10% of the cases of what France do. And France is just on the other extreme where they don't even have a lockdown and they're not enforcing any sort of protocol. What are they doing? And Joel, we'll start with you. This is just disgraceful.
It's quite blasé from the outside looking in. And unfortunately, it almost seems to be pretty reflective of what's actually going on in Europe at the moment. There seems to be a kind of sort of lackadaisical attitude around COVID-19. But yeah, look, I mean, it's hard to know where to begin with this one. I guess first things first, we should knock it on the head that Alex Zverev, what are you doing? I mean, if you've got a fever, that is an immediate red flag. Even dating back to the early days, December, January, when this thing was first kicking off, the fever was a sure sign that you need to be super careful. Yeah. So the fact that he hasn't reported it or said anything and gone out and played and put Jannik Sinner in the firing line, potentially Carlos Ramos, the chair umpire, is just extremely selfish, but in that sense, kind of not surprising. And then after that, as you said, Val, no tournament organized testing since September 29th. That is staggering. It's been
in October now. Like it hasn't even been tested this new month, Joel.
Exactly. It's been sort of 5 to 6 days and no tests. So the fact that there is the fever, how does that go unnoticed is beyond me. And, sort of taking to Twitter this morning and sort of reading people's thoughts and reading articles about this, you can only really compare at the moment in terms of protocol, what the French Open have done compared to the US Open. And obviously, Val, we spoke to Luke Saville on Breakpoint, and he was explaining that in the New York City bubble, the regulations were quite strict. Obviously, the players couldn't leave the grounds. They were tested upon entry. And then Luke was saying they were tested pretty much every morning and had they had to fill in a questionnaire about symptoms and whether they had any. And it was only then that they could then go onto court and practice and do all these other things. So it's interesting because we spoke a lot about how we thought the US Open would be a big problem, but by comparison, the French Open has just been I'm not going to say a shambles because there's only been a few positive tests so far and they seem to have been knocked on the head pretty quickly. But now that we've seen these regulations, you have to wonder what's going on. Just what Alex Zverev was talking about, the symptoms, it's just so eerily like Grigor Dimitrov and Francis Tiafoe at the Adria Tour and in Atlanta. It's just, I'm mind blown how it can happen.
Yeah, it's not great. It is absolutely terrible. And look, there's a couple of pieces on the tennismenu.com that I wrote. I think I wrote both, and it was the F1 is forging the way that tennis isn't by staying in Europe. Well, that's completely debunked now because we should have probably stayed in America with the way that they're handling things, or in terms of the tennis and sport anyway, not politics or anything like that. We'll steer clear of that. But and also the c'est la vie attitude of Roland Garros, because they have been terrible. The fact that they're not testing, and yesterday on the 4th of October, they recorded 12,565 new cases of COVID-19. That is a disaster. And there is no lockdown. There's no bubble. Denis Shapovalov said it as well. There is no bubble. The New York did things in a much better way. And that's the problem. This is the problem. It's kind of arrogant. And even the way that they shifted the tournament at the start of the year, they haven't really shown much respect for the sport and its athletes. And Mark, I want to ask you this. If you're Jannik Sinner and you played someone, and look, we don't know if Zverev does have COVID yet. We must stress that. We don't know if he has it. But we can, if we're assuming that he does, and what if he tests positive? And then if you're Jannik Sinner and you're his coach, what do you say? What do you do in that situation? Do you have to go get immediately tested? It throws off your preparation for a quarterfinal with Rafa Nadal. How do you try and overcome that as a coach? Is it more that just try and relax, focus on what you can focus on? This is out of your control now. What do you say to him?
Yeah, pretty much exactly what you said. I think it's just important to stick to what you got to do in preparation, and obviously go and get yourself tested. Obviously, that's the first thing to ensure that you don't have the symptoms. But you know, this is a massive, massive opportunity for Jannik Sinner. I mean, he's playing some great tennis. He's been phenomenal. It's probably his best result in a Grand Slam, which it is. And, you know, beating someone like Zverev, a sixth seed, incredible. Like, you know, the last thing you want is to be flattened by something like this. And, you know, you want to be able to ride the highs because there's not that many in this sport to be able to enjoy. And you got to ride the highs when they're there. And he's obviously in a great position. But where does that leave the tournament? If, you know, Zverev has been around the locker room, if he's been associated with other players, if they've shared equipment or whatever it might be, where does that leave if he is, you know, COVID positive? I mean, there's a lot in the air at the moment, but as a coach, I'd be just saying, look, let's just do what we can control and let's get ourselves tested. Let's just train and get ready. And if it does come through that something's happened, then you know, you've got to deal with it when it comes up. I mean, life is 10% what you dealt, 90% how you deal with it, really. So, I mean, that's at the end of the day, all you can do is a coach and a player.
Yep, exactly right. And I love the insight there. And looking ahead, his draw doesn't get any easier either. Like Rafa Nadal on clay, you want to make sure that your preparation is pristine for that matchup. But I guess it's a wait-and-see situation with how Zverev actually tests. And is the tournament in jeopardy? That's the big question. If Zverev does test positive, Joel, what does that mean for the tournament? Because he's sharing a locker room with a lot of other players here. There's Rafa was there, team was there, Schwartzman was there, Sonego was there, Hugo Gaston was there, Jannik Sinner there, and then Djokovic might have been there practicing, as have a lot of the other players probably in the top half of the draw. And then maybe he's crossed paths with some of the females in the draw. You don't know. So what does that mean for the tournament? I think if he tests positive, surely everybody, there is a line out the door to get tested for each player that's still in the draw.
Yeah, well, I think Mark summed it up pretty well. You've got to have some serious question marks about what happens next, I guess. You can only bulk test, I think, Val. And obviously, we're not scientists, but what we do know is that if, and again, we stress if Alex is positive, but the symptoms are telltale signs that he quite possibly is, if he's positive, then, yeah, you'd have to think that given the speed that that we know the virus can move at, then potentially there might be some other players in trouble as well. But we sincerely hope that that isn't the case, because it's been an enjoyable tournament in terms of narratives and storylines, and it'd be just such a tragedy if one loose screw just undid the whole thing, really.
Yep. Well, speaking of narratives, Joel, Hugo Gaston pushed Dominic Thiem to the absolute limit last night, and Thiem looked like he was in control of this match and winning the first two sets 6-4, 6-4. And then the next two were won by the young Frenchman 7-5, 6-3 before Thiem ended up getting on the right side of the ledger and taking the final set 6-3. He's become a king of final sets after his US Open final. And now continuing, the stats looked pretty good in favour of Dominic Thiem. He hit 59 winners, 63 unforced errors, so a little bit on the even side of the ledger. And Hugo Gaston only 30 winners, but the points were fairly even, 158 to 147. But Mark, I want to talk to you about the tactical nous that you mentioned at the start of the show from Gaston and what he was able to do to force his way back into this match.
Very interesting match to watch. And, you know, I think Dominic Thiem sort of summed it up at the end, and he sent a tweet out as well that he wanted to show Gaston that he had touch as well, because Gaston was drop-shotting nearly every second ball. It was absolutely incredible to watch how he took him off the baseline a lot more of the time than Dominic Thiem wanted to spend up forward of the net. So Gaston would play and keep him deep one ball, and then he'd drop shot the next ball and just change the length of the game. And Dominic Thiem is notorious for being able to be across the baseline, lateral, play heavy ball, and then be aggressive. He wasn't able to do that. He'd play one shot, and then Gaston would just play him short, and he'd come to the net a lot. He was playing so much from the front of the court. It was very, very interesting to watch. And there was a lot more feel than there was sort of aggression, I guess, in terms of ball striking, which was a really different match to watch. And Thiem just wasn't expecting it. I think, you know, after the first two sets, it started to increase a lot more. Gaston started to drop shot a lot more. Thiem was sort of like, well, hang on, I can't get into my rhythm. I can't get my groove. And he sort of lost his groove for a little while. And then obviously in that final set came back. But the interesting comments he made after the match, I thought, was incredible in the press conference, talking about that he's cooked, basically, that he doesn't know how much more he's got to give, that Diego Schwartzman probably should be the one going favour into the match. This is a really big moment. I think he's almost showing his cards a little bit, saying that, hey, the whole US Open, French Open thing has actually destroyed me, and I'm struggling. So, I mean, whether that's just to try and lessen the pressure a little bit moving forward or what it might be. But, you know, it's definitely some telltale worrying signs when you're playing a five-set match against someone that you probably shouldn't have spent five sets with. And then, obviously, you know, starting to talk about being fatigued and being tired. It's an interesting one for Dominic Thiem.
Is it mind games, do you think? Do you reckon he's just trying to downplay, you know, how he's actually going? Because his first few rounds were really scintillating. So, you know, this is one five-set match. He's pretty fit. He plays a lot of tennis. He's prepared himself as much as he can for a situation like this. He knew it was coming up. But do you think that that's actually just him saying, okay, like Rafa did at the start of the tournament with the conditions, but all of a sudden Rafa has barely dropped a game?
Yeah, it could be. I don't think Dominic Thiem's the kind of guy to try and be like that. I think he's pretty honest with the way he talks, and he's always been like that in his press conferences. He kind of just says it as it is. And I think there's definite relevance. He would be tired. There's no doubt about it. He was spent after that US Open. And then to be able to come back and now play on clay where the points have been a lot longer because of the slower conditions. You know, there was a lot more points in the 9-plus category and the 5 to 8 category than there should be. I think it was almost a 50-50 contest between 0-4 and 5-plus. And that makes it a very interesting match where the points are a lot longer. He was having to run a lot more because Gaston was drop-shotting and then going over his head and moving him around and being a bit more crafty. So, you know, he probably is a bit tired, but, I mean, he's a superstar. And I think, you know, we can't discount that. He's a great player. And if he recovers really well from this match, I think he's definitely going to be the favourite.
Yep, I think so. And that's exactly right. I think against a guy like Diego Schwartzman, who he's played so many times before and been on the right side of the ledger, I think he'll be okay. But the stats were fairly even in the third and fourth sets, which is pretty unbelievable. In the fourth set itself, Gaston only hit two winners, but only four unforced errors. Team was 9 winners and 13 unforced errors. And Joel, just looking at the consistency from the young Frenchman, he seems to have the legs to be and the clutch or the ability to play those clutch points, because to lose the fourth against Wawrinka, come back, win the 5th, 6-love, and then to be 2 sets to love down against the US Open champion and to force it to 5, this guy seems to have what it takes.
Yeah, it's impressive. Hopefully, I mean, obviously we look at the French Open and, you know, as we know, it's unique and we're seeing a lot of young players, unseeded players really come up and surprise us. And Hugo Gaston has been one of those. The interesting thing for me will be the next events that he plays. Sort of, can he back it up? Even guys like Sebastian Korda, that are coming up, Daniel Altmaier, after this event, can they really solidify their results in forthcoming events at the start of next year, and really sort of solidify themselves in that category of kind of the next, I guess, echelon of players that are kind of on the verge of breaking through? That's what I'll be looking for.
Well, I think something that we'll be looking for is, well, Disney just predicted this, didn't they, when Beauty and the Beast came out and the villain Gaston, they made up a whole song about him, and who knew we'd be singing it in tennis? Let's have a little snippet of that.
Oh, one slick as Gaston, no one's quick as Gaston, no one's next as incredibly thick as Gaston, for there's no man in town half as manly.
No man in town half as manly. There you go. Hugo Gaston. Well, he's got a thick neck, apparently, and he's going to be a Grand Slam champion. Let's see what happens. But we'll move on to the women's. Just the other men's results from last night. As we said, Diego Schwartzman threw over Lorenzo Sonego, 6-1, 6-3, 6-4. Yannick Sinner over Alex Zverev, 6-3, 6-3, 4, 6, 6-3. Nadal over Sebastian Korda, 6-1, 6-1, 6-2. And as we mentioned, team over Gaston. Did anyone see what Nadal did for Sebastian Korda after the match last night? Korda asked him for an autograph. Nadal gave him one of his own shirts and said to my friend Sebastian, all the best for you in your future, Rafael Nadal. Unbelievable. And I read that autograph in Rafa Nadal voice and quite pleasurable. I do enjoy reading things in Rafa voice, but I'm no Elliot Loney in my impersonation. But the women's draw last night, well, Nadia Podoroska, the Argentinian qualifier, getting through over Barbara Krejcikova, 2-6, 6-2, 6-3, continuing her run. She'll play fellow qualifier Martina Trevisan, 6-4, 6-4 over Kiki Bertens. Lazarus is out, Mark. Hannibal Lecter gone. Alina Svitolina, big win over Caroline Garcia, 6-1, 6-3. And Iga Swiatek, I think that's how you say it. Well, we thought Halep was unbeatable. She has been wiped. What swept like that clay off the lines, off the court. It just purely unbelievable. And Mark, to come out and destroy a world number one like this is pretty scary. And what did you notice about the match? And what do you notice about the statistics that really, really stand out for you?
Well, it's interesting because just literally did an interview for radio before we came on to this show, and they asked me the same question, and I just went, we've got a very similar player on our hands to an Ash Barty. She can be so creative. She was playing angles. She was playing drop shots. She was coming to the net. She was so adaptive and unpredictable watching what she was able to do to Halep. Now, the angles she was creating, angles I haven't seen female players utilize at all. I mean, she was hitting heavy and wide. She was then coming forward. She was opening space up. She was taking away space, coming to the net. Incredible to watch a female athlete playing like that. And I love seeing it because it's showing us that the game is shifting a little bit on the female side, and it's not just all power. And we look at Ons Jabeur, we look at Swiatek, we look at however you want to say her name, we look at Ash Barty. And I think if we can see what is happening in the game, and it doesn't matter if it's male or female, you have to have skills that are adaptive to different situations and environments. And if you've got that like she does in spades, you can beat players like Simona Halep. Now, we all thought Simona Halep was unbeatable right at this moment. And I think until last night she was. But, wow, what an incredible match to watch. And if anyone saw it, watch how she utilises the space of the court in the way she did. Go onto the Roland Garros YouTube channel and see the highlights. The space, the court space was just incredible.
Yeah, oh, it's just, it is literally, she was unstoppable last night. But listen to some of these stats, guys. She broke Halep four times in this match and had 14 opportunities. So she lost 10 of them. Halep didn't even have a breakpoint chance. She won 51% of her receiving points. Halep only won 24%. She hit 30 winners to 12 and only 20 unforced errors. That is, and won 81% of her first serve points. Halep only won 53. She won 69% of her second serve points. Halep only won 38%. That is a brutal, brutal affair and a brutal loss for Simona Halep, who said she'll have a chocolate bar and hopefully be better tomorrow. And I think you're going to need more than a chocolate bar after that, because that is scary good. And Joel, you've got a bold prediction about Iga Świątek for the rest of the tournament.
Yeah, I think she'll win. I really do. She was that impressive against Simona Halep. And I think the thing that impressed me, obviously Mark's outlined expertly the way that, that she played. She mixed it up brilliantly. Just the confidence that she played with. She basically just stood up on her side of the court and just said to Simona, come at me, bring it on. And when the ball came to her, she was not afraid to just club it and paint the lines. It was brilliant to watch. And just that variety and the confidence that she's playing with is just so impressive. And now she's beaten the 2018 winner in this draw, and she's also beaten the 2019 runner-up, Markéta Vondrousova. So she's looking really, really good, and I'm going to stick by that prediction. I think she's going
to
win this.
All right, we'll hold you to that, Joel. We'll hold you to that. Mankini for you if you lose. all right, well, look, the bottom part of this top half of the draw for the women's, two qualifiers will face each other in the French Open quarterfinals. Nadia Podoroska at 131 in the world, and Martina Trevisan at the 159th ranked player. The last time a qualifier made the French Open quarterfinals, this is all from Kevin Pollard, by the way, on Twitter at Football Ruse, if you want to follow him. He is stunningly good at finding stats, and it is, I love these so much. So last time a qualifier made the French quarterfinals was Yaroslava Shvedova in 2012, but the first time since 1978 that two female qualifiers have made the last eight, they were Mirka Benlova and Helga Mastov. And now, if best slam performances by a female qualifier, 1999 Wimbledon semifinals, that was Stevenson, and the 1978 Australian Open semifinals, Matheson. No female qualifier has ever made the semis at the French, so one will do that. But if Podoroska and Trevisan Podoroska will play Svitolina and Trevisan will play Świątek, they win their semi-quarterfinals, we'll have a qualifier in the final. And my question to you guys the other day was whether we would see an unseeded player win Roland Garros. And it seems as though we might even have one in the final. Three of the last four of the top eight are unseeded. Mark, you're right. Throw a blanket over the women's draw. Who emerges?
Yeah, it's interesting because yesterday we touched on players that are outside that 100 or 200 mark or 300 mark. They're all capable. And this is the biggest thing about this game, is that, you know, it could be opportunity, it could be finances, it could be something else that holds them back. But from a pure playing perspective, if we look at ball striking ability, gameplay, whatever you want to call it, it's the same, no different. You know, you look at someone like Pliskova, who goes out early and has been going out early in these tournaments, and world number one she's a really impressive player, but sometimes doesn't have the ability to go forward. Why? Maybe mentally, maybe fatigue, maybe whatever comes into play, pressure. And it's no different to these players that are coming through qualifying. I mean, you know, they're in a position where they've got a free swing, which is great, and they've got an opportunity, which is an amazing thing. And COVID has given more players opportunity. And I'm not saying these two in particular, but I love seeing players that have been thereabouts, going okay, but finally get some reward for effort. And I've coached a lot of players that sat around the 200, 300, 400 mark, and they are all capable. You know, I never forget practicing in the Australian Open a few years back, and a player I was working with, Dane Papoggia, practiced with Thomas Berdych prior to Berdych playing Roger Federer. And, you know, Berdych wanted us to warm him up as well right before the match, and he kept asking for us. And Dane was not only keeping up, but played a few points, and Dane was handling it no problem. Now, why is there a difference? It could be mentality. It could be, you know, the financial ability to pay for the ability to play for longer periods. It could be opportunity. It could be a lack of draws. You know, you maybe get a couple of easy rounds early on. You get some confidence and momentum. You could play a player on a day they're not really ready. You get some momentum. You beat them. You keep going. So there's so many things that come into play. And awesome to see two qualifiers get right the way through. I think it's a great thing for tennis that this has happened. I know it's a challenging tournament. I know there's been a lot of it's had its challenges, but to see players get opportunity and to do what they're doing and to make more money than they've probably ever made in their life, I'm so happy for them, because this is a tough game, and well done to those two girls. And hopefully we do see an unseeded winner, because that would be really cherry on the top for me.
It would be absolutely fantastic. And it'll be first since Yelena Ostapenko at the 2017 French Open edition as well. But tonight's matches, just as exciting. Petra Kvitova against Zhang Shuai. First up on Philippe Chatrier. Grigor Dimitrov and Stefanos Tsitsipas will take to the court immediately after that, which is a really exciting one. One-handed backhand, which Mark is going to teach me, I reckon, and hopefully we'll get it going. But Novak Djokovic against Karen Khachanov, his first real test of this tournament. So we'll see what Karen can do, the big Russian, and Fiona Ferrer against Sofia Kenin. And then Martin Fucsovics on court, Suzanne Long to kick things off with Andrei Rublev, Ons Jabeur and Danielle Collins, then Pablo Carreño Busta and Daniel Altmaier, and on court, Simon Mathieu, Laura Siegman and Paula Badoza will take on each other at first up on court. So they're all the fourth round matches for tomorrow, or for tonight, I should say. Mark Sifoulis, thank you very much. It has been an absolute pleasure talking tennis with you again. Your insight is unparalleled, and that is why you are hashtag better than Mouratoglou.
No, just look, it's interesting. I'm just passionate about this sport, and you know, hopefully we as a trio are really keeping people in the know of the game, because I think, you know, we need more people to love this sport like we do, and trying to ooze passion and get this across to so many people across the world. And hopefully you're enjoying the show. And the second week is well and truly on track, and let's see who takes it. It's going to be very interesting.
Exactly right. And if you do want to ask us anything on the show, if you want to ask a coaching question to Mark, please comment on our posts on Facebook, The Tennis Menu, or Twitter at The Tennis Menu, Instagram as well. Send us in some questions, because we do want to hear your thoughts on the tennis. And please ask us. We're more than happy to answer it. If you want to ask a news question to me or Joel as well, coaching question to Mark, whatever you want, ask us, The Tennis Menu on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn as well, or YouTube. Send us a comment on our page there. Joel Frucci, thank you very much. And remember, you got to find some other languages tomorrow. I'm a bit disappointed you've only gone English and Italian.
Maybe Polish tomorrow.
All right. Oh, there it is.
All right, the Polish, you can, and bring some Kransky as well if you want some. So you can, I know you.
Yeah, like I will that. Definitely take the opportunity to do that, I think.
Yeah, I know you like your meat, so that will go very nicely. But it's been a great show. Thank you very much, Joel Frucci, Mark Sifoulis. Remember, thetennismenu.com. And get an annual subscription for just $99.90 US, which includes over 600 tennis specific drills and resources to make you a better tennis coach. And remember, you can download the Tennis Menu's training journal for just $19 US on thetennismenu.com. It's great. It's been put together by Mark so well, and you can download it there. It's a wonderful read, and it really helps you out a lot if you want to make yourself a better tennis coach or better tennis person as well, to understand the game. It's been Val Febo, Joel Frucci, Mark Sifoulis on Roland Garros Daily Show for the Tennis Menu. We'll catch you tomorrow.